Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Well, hey, it's Botcast time. Good afternoon, good evening, or even, apparently, some people listen to this Botcast in the car in the morning, in which case, top of the morning to you. I hope you're well. It's September Botcast. It's Nigel here, and I've got a Botcast virgin with me this month. Don't know how you feel about that.
It's fine, thank you.
You're going to cope? Okay.
Yeah. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome if you're in the bath.
This is, no one listens to the Botcast in the bath.
I don't know.
Paul, I do. this is Paul Finnegan, and Paul Finnegan has joined me several months ago now to head up the EC Online program, Achieve 365, all those implementation plans and everything attached with it. And he's a very, very fascinating guy with quite an interesting career. And in particular, Paul, you spent quite a lot of time running businesses for, you know, as the manager, as the director, on behalf of venture capital
players. That's right, yeah.
Players. So we're going to have a little chat about that and explore some things there. And you've also spent some time working overseas?
Yes, plenty of time, yeah. Italy and the States, South Africa.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So we'll dive into some of those little bits as well. And as ever in the podcast, lots to get through, not a lot of time. So I'm going to kick off this month. And I know this... I'm going to talk about my little trip to Jamaica. I went to Jamaica in back end of August for a couple of weeks. And Jamaica is my spiritual home. I do think in a previous life, Paul, I was Jamaican in some guise or another. It may have been as a goat.
Right.
You're kind of rendered speechless. I just feel a very strong affinity with that country. And as everybody knows, obviously I have great rhythm. And maybe that's where it comes from. Anyhow, Sue and I were married in Jamaica, actually, point of fact, a long time ago, 23 years ago. And so it's one of my favourite places to go. And this year was a really special holiday for us because for the first time in, I think, 4 years, we just went. It was just Sue and I and the four children.
Brilliant.
We didn't have any hangers-on.
Okay,
you know, girlfriends, boyfriends, all that kind of stuff. So it was just the six of us, and we did actually have a fantastic time. But I hadn't been away. I say I had been away, but I had not properly switched off at all yet this year until I went to Jamaica. And people listening to this broadcast, some of them have been around EC for a while, will know. You know, I'm a very good role model when it comes to holidays. I do. We travel a lot, we take good time away from the office. But this year, quite a bit of the time I've taken away from the office, I've had to be doing work. A lot of the Achieve 365 stuff in particular, and when I was in Mauritius earlier this year, I spent a lot of time each day kind of working on scripts and writing stuff for that. And so I hadn't had a proper kind of switch off, which I wasn't like bemoaning that. It's not like, oh, aren't I, what feel sympathy for me? That's not what I'm saying at all. But when I got to Jamaica and kind of downed tools, which I pretty much did, I was just reminded of the huge importance of this. So this is really, I can't stress this enough really, how as a business owner, all of us were so busy in the day-to-day, doing our do. You know, we've all got the customers to look after, the staff issues to deal with, there's all the things we have to do, and it seeps into our weekends and it consumes most of our waking moments. And we kind of enjoy it and we're driven and we're passionate, most of us. But when you get away out of the normal day-to-day environment and you're not doing all that stuff and you're not on the emails and you're not checking the phone all the time, what happens is clarity starts to emerge. Damien Smith talks about it in his book, Just Do Nothing. And it's absolutely
It's thinking
right.
time.
Well, yeah, it is. But you don't have to think. No. It's thinking time. It just kind of is.
I have a similar experience because where I live, we're we're out in the sticks a bit. Just you live in a, Shrewsbury.
You live in a rural, idyll.
That's right. Mm. And I've got a lot of grass, so it takes a long time to cut.
Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon. I thought you were confessing that.
No,
oh,
no. Okay. I mean, green grass. But I enjoy it because it's you don't have to think. You just cut the grass, and it's really good time to chill out and think about what's happened and what's coming ahead.
So tell me, Paul, do you have a ride on?
I've got a ride on, and I've got a little push one as well, but for sort of got a bit of an orchard, so I can't use the ride on there. So,
okay.
So I spend like good 2-3 hours at a weekend in the summer, and it's good, really good thinking time.
Okay. There you go. See, we're talking about grass cutting on the podcast, taking it to new levels. I'm not sure this up or down.
I think the point of it is really, Nigel, is it's not about cutting the grass; it's the time out.
Yes, no, I get it. No. And this is the point. And I cannot stress, honestly, my trip to Jamaica was so. I mean, I still want to talk. I need to talk to my accountant, to Ainsley, about this because my holidays should all definitely be tax deductible because I make so many decisions and I see things with so much more clarity when I'm away from the day to day, and that really is just my point. And because you don't have to go to the Caribbean to do it, as Paul says, you can sit on your ride on a Sunday afternoon. But getting, although that wouldn't be the same, because you're right, it's about the time, isn't it? The fact is, it's because you have got a couple of hours.
That's right.
And therefore, your brain does have time to kind of still. And you know, Sue and I went for some very long walks on the beach at Negril. And just the process of conversing, because I'm actually not a very good solo thinker. I think much better with others.
Yes.
And just, I mean, I don't know, Sue puts up with me, and I gibber on, and every now and again she'll, yes, Nigel, she'll come up with some kind of insight. But the whole process of just going through it is so valuable. And I wanted to mention it on this podcast because it's that time of year when, as entrepreneurs, we're going to start thinking about next year. There's a lot of people are going to be start planning 2017. Already, some of you will have you'll have secured your TEEP by now for next year. You'll have booked in your courses, and I'll talk about those in a minute. Whether it's Gerald Ratner or Clive Woodward or whoever it is that floats your boat. I know many people have kind of booked all five of the celebrity masterclasses. But so we're starting to think about next year, and I've always been a big advocate. We always go away at October half term. We'll do the same this year. We're going to on a Disney cruise at October half term. And on that cruise, and again, interestingly, having waited 4 years for the six of us to go away together, it's happened twice in the space of less than 3 months because the six of us are all going on that cruise together. But on that part of that cruise, we will have one evening, Sue and I, in particular, we'll go for dinner by ourselves, and I will take some A3 paper, and we will map out next year. A lot of it's already taking shape in terms of trips and holidays and that sort of thing, and we'll look at all things we want to do, whether it's to the house or, whether it's the cars, whatever it might be, and we'll turn it into our plan for our lives and our family next year, and I then have to transpose that into a plan for the business. And this is a technique that a number of the most successful members of EC have adopted this approach. I know Keith Edmonds, for instance, who is the reigning holder of the Most Impressive Growth Award. Keith's transformed his business over the last 3 or 4 years, and a key part of that for him now has become this early October weekend away with his wife Cecilia, and actually they take 2 days to map out what they're going to do and build it, and because what that gives them is tremendous clarity, and from the clarity then he then comes back and makes the right things happen in his business. So I just wanted to take the opportunity just to lobby really for you to make sure that you have some proper time away from the day-to-day to, as Paul said, just think and reflect. And if you want to pop round to his house and cut his grass for him, then I don't know, maybe that is that would that be
yeah
okay?
It'd be perfect, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah,
you could
yeah
do that. Somehow, some way, find your route to do that.
Go for a walk.
Yeah,
a walk in the park.
It needs to be a structured walk. It's not about this is. It's a bit, a walk in the park kind of probably won't cut it unless you. It's a little bit deeper than that. It wasn't just the beach walks in Negril. It was just having that time, that switch off time,
yes,
over. In my case, over a number of days. because I didn't go away and suddenly, like, you know, we flew on a Saturday, all right? It wasn't that, like, and on Monday I had clarity. That wasn't the case. Or it kind of iterates and you kind of process things, but being able to do it without all the interjections of the kind of day to day and having to do this and that and the other and all the demands that we all have, it just makes a big, big difference. And I mentioned the awards earlier on. Keith won the most impressive growth. I think if you're going to win an award, most impressive growth
is very good.
It's a good one to win. And we will be running the Entrepreneur Circle Awards again this year. Details will be out imminently. And you will be able to enter either yourself or you could nominate others. And the awards are going to be the winners and the finalists will all be announced at the national event, which is happening on the 26th of November. Now, got all sorts happening at that event, so that might be one just to put in your diary now. It's actually, you look, oh, that's a Saturday. Yes, it is. We are having a Saturday event. So the event's going to start at 10 o'clock on the Saturday morning. We will be there the night before. Doesn't want to come down. Lord knows what a Friday night's going to be like with a bunch of EC members. Crikey, in the heart of Birmingham. But we're at the NEC as usual, and we'll be there the Friday night, and then the full day national event is happening on the Saturday, and part of that is the EC Awards, and you'll be finding out imminently, if you haven't already, about how to enter or nominate others to do that.
Fabulous.
So what are you thinking about EC then, Paul? You've been here, three or four months?
Since June the 21st.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's fabulous. The end of your first quarter.
Yes, end of my first quarter.
Okay, so come on, give me a kind of outsider's perspective then on what you've seen.
Well, I'll tell you an actual, this is a story that's happened to me today.
Oh yeah.
So before we came here to do the podcast, yeah. I went to get some lunch and walking to the shop.
Never do a podcast on an empty stomach.
Well, now.
Wise man.
So anyway, walking to the local shop.
Actually, when you say the local shop, I mean the word local is not actually needed because it is like the shop.
The shop.
We are bereft.
It's a best of as well.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a best of, isn't it?
But we are bereft here.
We've got a choice of one.
Yes.
So on my way to the choice of one, which is very good, by the way. Okay. On the way to the choice of one, I took a phone call from somebody who worked for me in my last post.
Oh,
and she was going for a new job, wanted a reference and so on.
Okay.
And she said, how are you getting on? And I made the comment that if I wish I'd known half the things I've learned here in 3 months or was aware of in the previous jobs I've been in.
Yes.
Because they're so fantastic. And the skilled team that you've got here of, I call them bright young things.
There is a point here, because Paul and I, we are the grey hair. Well, I say grey hair.
I've got none.
Now, for those of you watching in black and white, Paul has little hair.
Yeah. So they are very skilled and they're up to date. They know what's happening. They know what's happening tomorrow, right? Which is so important. And when I started my last job before this one, everything I knew that was true is no longer true.
Mm.
But while you're in that job, you don't know that it's not true, and you just carry on and carry on with the techniques and things you know.
Because you kind of grew up in the motor trade, didn't you?
I started off in the motor trade. I worked for Fiat Group and lived and worked in Italy. I went to the Fiat school in Turin. And
that sounds like quite artistic. Were you a tenor?
No, I wasn't actually. But I was part of a program called the Manager of the Future.
Ooh.
And they had 12 of us.
Right.
None of us Italian. So there was English, French, Germans, and we were going to work in their subsidiaries around the world.
Okay.
And that was the plan. So the Fiat don't just make cars, but they also make components.
Okay.
So they owned companies that made starter motors and alternators and fuel systems and headlights.
Yeah.
And so my job ended up selling to English speaking motor companies. So I'd sell to Ford and Nissan in Washington and where. So I'm based in Italy, going back selling to these people. Rover that was. So yep. I sold the starter motor and the alternator for the case. So
it's engine. Sorry, just to be clear, we never mentioned Rover on the podcast.
Okay, all right.
Those that know it, so it's a very emotional experience.
Okay. Well, I won't mention the starter motor then, because no. If your car didn't start, it was probably I've got.
Paul, this is going terribly badly now.
Okay.
This is not. Okay. This is not a laughing matter, Paul.
Quality. Okay. We sell quality as well. I sell to Audi,
BMW. Okay.
Yeah, and so on. Those
well-known English-speaking. Well, no, manufacturers.
What actually happened is BMW bought Rover. And I inherited BMW that way, and then because I got on with them, they gave me Audi as well. So,
okay.
So yeah, and I in fact I had some great experiences with them. You know, I think the story I told you before about when I was in.
Oh, tell this. This is fantastic. This story. So this is when you were at Fiat.
This is I was
in Italy.
We had a company called Magneti Marelli. We made starter motors and alternators, and we were in San Salvo. Which is in the south of Italy, as yes. far down as Rome, but on the Adriatic.
Okay.
And I lived in this fantastic little place called Vasto. Beautiful little house. And anyway, it was beautiful. And we had these fellas over doing a quality survey.
Did you cut your grass back then as well?
There was no grass.
Oh, okay.
I had a swimming pool there. Okay. And I spent a lot of time looking after that.
Okay.
And anyway, the guys from Audi were doing a survey. So to supply any of these car manufacturers, you have to go through a rigorous procedure of surveys and quality yep. surveys. So they were doing the final one, and they were doing the walkthrough of the factory.
So these were from where? From
Audi.
From Audi.
These are dignitaries okay. from Audi.
So right? they've come across from Germany.
So they've come across from Germany.
And they were going to sign off the factory.
So they've been doing surveys. They've done all the technicalities on the product. I mean mm-hmm. that's it. So they're now checking the quality of the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a small example. If they found a washer on the floor, that would be a massive no-no, right? Because they even if that washer wasn't a component for their car, they could say, well, what if that washer ended up in our car? What's one of our components doing on the floor, picking up dust or dirt, and so it could cause a stop or a breakdown? So okay. they're looking
yeah,
at
yeah,
the
okay.
nth degree, I mean, okay. right? So the standards they're set are huge. Yeah.
You can't drop your washers.
No, you can't. So you can't have any problems. So anyway, they're walking through the factory, and they're there with the entourage. I'm there. I've got my boss there, a guy called Mel Pignano.
Okay.
Loads of Italians, really well dressed. Yes, yeah, I'll give them that. There.
Was it a sunny day?
Oh, it was a sunny day.
I'm picturing it as a sunny day.
It was a sunny day.
Blue
it was,
sky.
Beautiful. It was a lot of blue skies down. It was about Mayish time, okay. right? Beautiful day.
Anyone selling Cornettos?
No, there was no Cornetto salesman, but there was a guy called Ritty who I never seen without a cigarette out of his mouth, and he had his jacket over his shoulders. Remember that?
Okay.
Anyway, so
okay.
Always.
Okay.
Always. Anyway. Walking through the factory, picture the scene, and they're looking at, you know, men making, and mainly men making starter motors and machines, you know, winding coils.
Crunching, munching, yeah, get
all
it
the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, I could hear the words, Shopero, Shopero, Shopero. Now, Shopero means strike.
Oh, okay. Right? Okay.
The face of my boss and the Italian's entourage they're absolutely petrified. They're in utter shock. Anyway.
Because it's going to impact...
Well, the worst thing you could possibly do is show that you've got poor industrial relations. Because
yes.
if you've got poor industrial relations and your factory stops, that means their car factory stopped. Because
mm-hmm.
your starter motor's not available.
Yeah.
Right? So that's them. You're finished, you're out the door. That's,
okay.
No matter what you're doing, you're finished.
Okay.
Right? And I thought, I don't believe this. And there's this, it was a huge site, it was like a mile long. And this little Italian gentleman is the union shop steward, the syndicate guy.
Yes.
He's cycling the bike, shouting, Shopero, Shopero, strike, strike. And with that...
So he's calling them all out.
They're leaving. It's like a Mexican wave of leaving the factory, and I'm watching them. And the reason they're on strike is they're on strike because... Locally, all the unions called an hour strike for every business around the area to do with a pension dispute with the government. So he didn't care that right. Audi were there and the okay. jobs in the future, and this contract was worth, you know, £200 million.
Yes.
He was having us out. So,
so what did you do?
Well, I could see the panic on everyone's face, so I turned to these two German gentleman, and said, they spoke brilliant English, but not very good Italian, fortunately. Mm-hmm. And I said, right, we've got to go. I said, why? What's happening? Earthquake practice. It's unannounced. I'm ever so sorry. We don't know these things happen. Right? And the 2 years before I got to Italy, there'd been a big earthquake in that region, and Assisi was damaged. It was right. damaged actually about 4 or 5 years ago, and unfortunately, there's been a bad one just recently again, because you're near Campobasso there, okay. and the Apennine Mountains, so they do have a lot of earthquakes. So I just said, it's earthquake practice. So my boss looked at me, he didn't know what I'd said, so I said to him, you know, don't worry, I'm taking them out of here, they don't know what's going on. So I got them and said, come on, we better leave. Now, we should really report to the gate, but what I'll do, I'll take you back to my house where I live, which the company paid for, by the way, big villa with a swimming pool, and we'll have a few drinks, and I'll do us a pizza while it's waiting. Okay, they said. So in the car, we get to the gate to leave, and there's shop stewards there. Where are you going? Right, there's supposed to be a strike. So I said, I'm English, you know. I'm just going home. This has got nothing to do with me. I haven't got the pension here. So I have, actually. But anyway, so he let me go. So out we went, and off we went. But the good thing was, as we were driving away, all the other businesses, they were emptying as well of people.
Okay, because it was...
So it was because it was a strike for...
goodness
so
me.
Look, anyway, we drove off to the villa. We had a few beers and a bit of pizza. And I said to them, do you want to go back and finish it? Nah, we've seen enough, thank you. And we went out that night, had a few beers and something to eat, and they passed us.
So you got, wow, that's... That
and I was like, a hero.
That's like something out of Porridge, is that? That's like...
It's a true story.
It's like your Ronnie Barker's character. Was he not Norman Stanley Fletcher? He would, that's the sort of thing he would have done. But so when you left Fiat...
Yes.
You have worked for a number of... businesses, that have been acquired, or
venture
capitalists that own the businesses.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about that, because I mean, I think people are interested in what it's like working, having to report to venture capitalists.
It's a very difficult experience if you're not ready and used to it, right? But it can be very rewarding too.
Okay.
So I fell into it by accident. I was recruited as the sales and marketing director for a business that made car body parts.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, a gentleman by the name of Nick Shaw, he was once the...
I know his brother Rick.
Right. He was the European finance director for GKN once.
Okay.
And he spent... I think he bought and sold over 100 businesses for them. So he'd done a lot of work for the Sankey family and different venture capital companies. And he brought me in as a sales and marketing director to turn this business round that they'd invested. I think 3i had some money in it. Murray Johnson, which used to be NatWest's venture arm, they all had some money in it. And we sold it for... it was worthless, really, but we managed to sell it for £5 million, and it taught me, because what we'd done, we dressed it up and we made it, we gave it an offer and a future that it could have. Mm-hmm. It didn't really have a future yet, but it could have.
Okay.
And somebody bought it. In fact, the company who bought it was only two doors away from here. They don't exist anymore.
Okay.
But they were in Park Square here.
Okay.
A company called Parkco PLC. Anyway, they developed the business and off it went. So he retired and I ended up getting jobs then, other venture capitalist companies.
Okay.
Not big money, well, big money, but £1 to £5 million investments. There's people who specialise in, 50 to hundreds, I was in the 1 to 5.
Yeah.
And the money, so the way the venture capitalists work is they've got a fund from other institutions or high wealth families. Yes. And that money's then invested, and they're looking for returns of not two or three, they're looking for like 5 and 8x the investments.
Okay.
No.
So 5 to 8%?
No, 5 times.
Five to eight times
yes. Investment.
Yes, they're going to come in, and over the
three or four years,
they're going to get back kind of 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 times
the investment. Yeah. Right. Now, the thing to remember, there's a fund, and that fund might invest 10 businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll expect that 2 will be a disaster.
Yeah.
1 will return the fund.
Yes.
And the rest will be the earnings.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there'll be a group of businesses in there that they'll have labelled that they can't let go. They won't let go. They'll need to sell them or do something with them. So I worked in that section. So the businesses, not the disasters that they could afford to let go, not the successes that are going to be well, but the ones that they've invested in that aren't going anywhere.
Okay.
Now, there's two simple reasons why they're failing. Either they've invented something that nobody wants. So, like, they've now invented a new horseshoe and somebody's invented the motor car, so blacksmiths are disappearing off the street corner.
Yeah.
Or what they have got is good and the people they've invested in can't do anything with it. So somebody's invented something really well, but they haven't got the skills to sell it or market it.
Okay, yeah.
So that's where somebody like me was brought in to help sell it or market it or whatever. And so the other thing to remember is that the venture capitalists, even though they'll own a controlling share, because when they invest, they become a partner. They're not a bank that's lent the money.
No, they're a shareholder in the business.
Yes, one of the problems for a lot of the people who take venture capital is that they see the venture capitalists as a bank or a lender of money.
Okay, but they're not.
They're not really, they're a partner.
They're part of the business, yeah.
But tax reasons, they can't make any executive decisions. So they only hold non-executive positions. So that's why they need to employ people like me, who are not part of the... will make executive decisions.
Okay.
All right. So working for them is extremely stressful in the terms that they have a very short window of what they see. Right. So there's no time. So there's no time for a plan to formulate or to.
Right. Yeah. They're looking at the last quarter.
You've got to do it. Yeah. Right. No matter what it is, whatever it is, whatever it is, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that from my time at Barclays.
Yeah.
And everything hinged around the half-year results.
Yes, especially a PLC as well. Yeah. They're saying, because somebody has gone and told an investor, this is what we're going to do, and you've got to do it.
Yeah.
And so the difficulties with that is one, they can't make any executive decisions, so they can't help you. The upside of that is they're not going to interfere, right? Mm-hmm. So you have got a free hand
on a day-to-day basis. You can do things.
The really debilitating thing is you've got to remember that it's only for a short window that you're going to exist, right? You're a butterfly. You are only going to be there. It's only going to last because they've got to return the fund. The fund's going to finish and it's got to be sold or got rid of or floated or something.
Yeah.
Right? So you're working on that pressure all the time. So growing the business is actually important and getting it into profit's important, but having a future for the business.
Yeah.
So you've got something to sell.
Yeah,
if you buy this and you invest in it, you can do this, that's the... which is a difference from probably a lot of our business owners who are listening here today, who've got their strategy isn't to sell their business. They might, in their mind, be thinking one day I'd like to do it.
Yeah.
But they're not thinking, all right, I've got to sell it by the 31st of December 2018.
Yes.
Right, so that's the difference.
Okay. And you had, because you won some awards, didn't you?
I won Director of the Year in 2009. Me and the wife went off to a lovely chateau in Paris, and I was presented with an award and had some nice photos. And because that was for a French private equity company called Allo Private Equity, and they invested in...
It's called Allo.
Allo, as in A-L-O-E, private equity.
Okay.
And they, Allo. And very nice guys. In fact, Jean-Claude, one of the main partners, he was knighted, the equivalent of the garter of the French Republic.
Did you have to listen very carefully because they said things only once.
Oh, they only said things once, but they were very astute, and they invested in their fund was they had two funds. They had a €30 million and a €300 million fund.
Okay.
And they invested in green and clean technologies. So what's called run-of-the-river hydros. So a hydro dam, which is built in the river so the river can still run.
Okay.
Right, so you've got the turbines in the run of the river, so you're not actually flooding
the valley. Sounds like a Hollywood film.
Yes.
But, in the run of the river.
But they do a lot of those, especially in places, India and so on. And they invested in like plastic bottle recycling plants and Wii recycling, which is like all the gold and things in your mobile phone and your television.
Yeah.
And I worked for them in a energy saving device company, which was in based at the time in Warsaw.
Oh yeah.
They'd invested €2.3 million. There was £196 left when I got there. They hadn't sold anything.
They spent all the money.
The money had gone. Yeah. Yeah. They'd spent a lot. They had nice company cars, they'd stayed in nice hotels and nice restaurants, but they actually hadn't sold a thing. And
so what did you do?
Well, the first thing I'd done is I thought, right, I've got to sell this device, right? It reduced energy in large industrial plant.
Okay. You know?
And I wanted to see whether I could sell it. Will it sell?
Yes.
So I went to where I knew, so I sold it to Ford. I did a deal with Ford first and got them to sell it at their test site down in Essex. And they've got huge boilers there the size of a house. They use a lot of gas. Because when they're testing cars, you know when your car's tested for its emissions, it has to be tested based on the a sunny day in California. That's what they all run on. Yeah, that's the test. So all cars around the world are tested on the same condition, right?
Right.
So they have to get this big hangar down there to those temperatures.
Okay.
And that's how you test your emission. Okay. And I will point out this there. On a warm day, your car is going to be a lot more efficient than it is on a cold day. So when you look at the miles per gallon, you think, my car doesn't do that miles per gallon. It's because it was tested on a warm day.
Okay.
Rather than a cold day. So anyway, I went there first, sold it to them, made a success. We got some money. Cash was a nightmare, but we got through and we sold it and ended up expanding the business and selling all over the world.
And are you reporting to the VCs on a quarterly basis or more frequently?
On a quarterly basis. The one of the things that frustrated me was that if there was something big to tell them, they weren't interested. They didn't want to know until that meeting, you know. It was a really strange situation. So, Nigel, if I came in here on Saturday and the building was on fire, I'd phone you. I think you'd be interested. You wouldn't be saying, oh, we'll wait till the next quarter meeting. But
true.
Literally, they wouldn't be interested until that quarter meeting.
Oh, really?
It's a very strange relationship.
That is,
isn't
it? Yeah. That is. Do you miss it?
Actually, I don't know. Right, because
must be great working with someone like me now.
Well, I tell you what I like. I tell you what I like about the EC. Right, it's immediate. You know that immediate. It's actually taking me back to when I was a young man, because I learnt everything I learnt about when I worked in Fiat Group.
Yes,
everything was there and then. You had to act. You had to act on your feet. You had to do things there and then, like the earthquake story.
Yeah.
I became a hero because I could do things.
Yes.
Know? And what I like about the EC, it's just full of people doing things.
Yes, that is true.
You know, there's people doing something all the time.
Yes, our metabolic rate is quite high, isn't it? That is.
And I actually heard, I haven't discussed this with you before, you know, people say, oh, there's always changing, there's always things changing.
Yeah.
And that's not a negative, that's an absolute fantastic positive, because the world is changing. Every day something new is changing.
Well, we've got a sign upstairs in one of our toilets that says, there's no such thing as the status quo.
Well, I agree with that.
You're either shrinking or you're dying. There's another sign that says don't flush things down the loo, but the status quo sign is absolutely right.
I fully agree with that 100%. And so to answer your question, how do I find the EC? It's absolutely fabulous. And I think, and I describe it because I, as you say, I'm looking at the, I'm heading up the Achieve 365. I say to the ICPs selling the Achieve 365, one of the key messages I'd have for anybody who I'm trying to persuade them that they need the Achieve 365
is
here in Birmingham is a resource that would any large multinational corporation would be proud of, right? This is the type of thing that they need. People at Starbucks in Seattle, or whether it's, you know, Vodafone, any of those companies have got this type of resource, but that's only available to them and their corporate headquarters and their branches around the world. The EC is comparable with all them, but it's available to small and medium-sized enterprises.
That's quite a nice way of looking at it.
That's how I see it.
Okay. That's very nice, that. So that's good. The time whizzes by, doesn't it? We were going to talk about the TEEPS as well today, and the training courses. Hopefully you've had a chance now to acquire your training event annual pass for next year. But it was interesting, the thinking around the bringing in the celebrity masterclasses and actually creating, you know, I'm hoping what we've done, I'm recording this, we're recording this on the week before the TEEPS actually go on sale and before it's all announced. And it's a little bit of a scary time, really, because I had to think carefully about what we did with the Training Academy next year. One option was to kill it and not run it. Or else if we're going to go ahead, I have to make it better, because as we were saying, Paul, it's, you know, there is no such thing as status quo.
There isn't.
So do we make it better? And obviously it's quite a big, you know, it's not a trivial investment. At least I'm able to pick up the phone to people like Deborah Searle or Gerald Ratner or Clive Woodward or whatever, but they still want paying. They're chunky kind of investments, and as indeed the rest of the infrastructure around the academy. But it was very helpful, because I didn't get to press the kind of go, no-go button until I came back from my Jamaica trip. And you know, at least one of those long walks in Jamaica was just around, are we doing the right thing, making this level of commitment and this financial investment in the training academy? Is it what people kind of want and need? And it's going to be very interesting over the next few weeks to see. Obviously, from my perspective, this year, you know, we've run some really fantastic courses, and the vast majority are, I mean, genuinely excellent and world class. Obviously, the few that I run are not quite to that standard, but some of the trainers have been amazing. And I know that one or two times things don't always quite go to plan, we've made some mistakes this year. We had to cancel a small number of courses this year. It wasn't in truth that many in the whole scheme of things, but we did have to pull some courses because we had literally, you know, one or two or three people booked on them, and you can't run a course. It doesn't, the thing just doesn't work that way. But because people have, you know, it happened because so we cancelled the courses because we were running certain courses too many times. So there were four or five dates for it this year. And so I find on days four and five, the numbers are really... So we've got that right, I think, next year, because we're running courses with a less frequency. Most courses have got at least a couple of dates, but a lot have just got two dates. So that means that there'll be good courses. And I recognise, you know, again, those one or two people have been... obviously, if you were booked on those courses, I had to cancel it. Look, that's a bad experience for you, right? So I can't have this going on next year. So we've introduced our no cancellation guarantee. So we will not cancel a course because of low numbers.
I think the structure change will take care of that as well.
And I think we'll wait and see, because I'm hopeful that we'll have more TEEP holders this year as well. Next year in 2017 than we had this year, because we have brought in some sizzle with the celebrity masterclasses. They are going to be great, and they're all really lovely people as well. So people like, I mean, Levi Roots. People don't know about Levi Roots. It took him 16 years to become an overnight success. He was making this sauce, and again, back there's a little Jamaican theme to this sort of Irish man, to this podcast today, because he was making this sauce 16 years in his kitchen at his home in Brixton, and it was a BBC researcher who saw him at a food festival that suggested he should apply to Dragon's Den. And 10 years ago it is, Paul. 10 years since he walked into Dragon's Den with his guitar. And he's going to bring his guitar, by the way, to our course. But now, you see, his source has gone from massive success all over the world now, in lots of different places, including, by the way, Jamaica. And he's got a restaurant in London at Westfield, which is really cool. He's done all sorts of ready meals and stuff as well. His business now, his brand now, is valued at £30 million. Now, that's going to be a fascinating day. Because here's a guy, we talk about VCs, but yep. I mean, he turned up and effectively pitched. You know, I mean, so over 16 years he tried to get investment into his business.
Couldn't get it.
And events he's worked out. So Levi's session is going to be, there's two parts to it. One is around the perfect pitch, and the other is about building a brand. Because there's a lot of us in business, you know, would like a brand that was worth £30 million. So that's a big deal. Deborah Searle is going to be amazing. She stole the show, I mean, before your time, but at the big national convention at the ICC 2 years ago, Deborah Searle absolutely stole the show. And everybody that was there, I feel, that day will want to come and spend a day with her, because she's got such a good program rolled out. And that's going to be a fantastic day as well. Clive Woodward.
Fantastic. I mean teacup. I mean, have you heard of Teacup? I mean, that's what he was saying to the players.
I know.
Before the final.
Let's not spoil it.
I won't. Remember though, remember Teacup.
But it is true. So Clive, we will talk about teacups. But I mean, I could argue what he is the best living coach.
Well, he's so good at managing teams. Yeah, the Queen has knighted him. He's a knight of the realm.
That is true.
This is the Galacticos of... If we were a football team, we'd be Barcelona or Real Madrid with these.
I think it's true. And his session will be great, because not only people know him for the rugby, for winning the World Cup with... he was the very first professional coach in the professional era of rugby union. But he's also, for the last two Olympics in 2008 and 2012... he was Team GB's director of sport. And again, that was the time when Team GB became a proper player at Olympic level.
And now look at them.
Yeah, and so some fantastic stuff there. And he's also an entrepreneur. Before, when he was playing rugby, it was an amateur game in those days in the 80s and the 90s. And he and his wife owned and set up and ran a computer leasing business.
Right.
And even now... He's got a learning app called Hive. I think, anyway, I know he'll tell us all about it. But it's, again, a serious business of his own. So, again, he'll be just a fantastic day with him. Gerald Ratner.
No. Well, we remember him. We were just talking about it. I've got no air.
So, Gerald Ratner is... I don't think there's anyone better for business owners to learn from than Gerald Ratner, because... To achieve what he achieved, you know, he built up that business. It was when he joined it with his father, you know, it was a little small family chain of jewellers. Him and his dad took it to like 100 shops, then his dad retired. And then he got properly ambitious, and he had, in the late 80s and the very early 90s, he had over 50% market share of all jewellery sales in the high street in the UK. And that's extraordinary.
50%.
That's just extraordinary. You know, and he owned Samuels and Ernest Jones and all these other big chains. And then, of course, he made that fateful speech where he lost everything. And the story then was pretty miserable for several years. I mean, he literally did lose everything.
In one speech.
And, the speech triggered it, and it kind of unravelled over a number of months. He was fired then by the chairman that he'd appointed as his own business, and they kind of fired him. And he had nothing left at all. But now, I mean, it's a long time on now. It's 25 years ago since he made that speech. But he did bounce back. It took him a little while, but he did bounce back. His online jewellery business now is turning over £25 million a year. And I don't think there's anybody better to learn from than someone that's achieved such massive levels of success, has then lost it all, and has then built it again. So, like, I can't wait for the full... I mean, though, again, he has spoken on an EC stage before, but it was like a one-hour keynote. This is going to be a proper day with Gerald Ratner. It's going to be amazing. And then we've got the lovely Catherine Granger, who I think... there's a lot of us a little bit in love with Catherine Granger.
Superb.
And but she's, you know, she's won medals. She's won medals at 5 separate Olympiads. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, she's just won her final medal now in Rio. I say her final medal, who knows? But the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, that's a long time ago. And she won a medal then as well.
Unbelievable.
And so it's going to be great with her. She's a doctor. Very, very intelligent lady. As lovely in the flesh. I've not actually met her, but I've had a few chats on the phone. And she's absolutely lovely. And she has such a lot of things about... Because we all have challenges. How do you stay at the top for that length of time. How do you prevail and get out there, do what you got to do
on the world
on
stage.
A day-to-day basis? And there's all sorts with Catherine's piece. Mm-hmm. And it's towards the back end of next year, but it's going to be fantastic as well. So we've got all those masterclasses, and of course we've got the implementer, the three-day event where you come along on day one, we help you compile and put together your marketing plan. And then on days two and three, we mobilise everybody in the EC, all our trusted suppliers, some others as well. And there's hands-on help there to help you get stuff done. So you go home after the 3 days, you have your clear plan developed after day one, and at days two and three, you implement it. And then we've got all the other courses and all the online courses as well. So plenty of, just it's going to be great to be part of the EC Training Academy next year. And we're going to have to end this though. Look, I've gone over time already. I can't, don't know where the time has whizzed by to. But thank you for joining us on the podcast today. We appreciate you listening to us, don't we, Paul?
Thank you very much. Yes, we do.
Paul, yeah, you've been the best guest we've had this month, definitely.
Thank you very much. And I'm the only guest you've had this month.
And obviously, we're looking forward to seeing the stripes on your lawn after the weekend.
Brilliant.
When you finish striking them. Thanks a lot, folks. We'll see you next month. We're back with our... it's going to be November next month. November's podcast. So remember...
the month of November.
Because the podcast is coming back to you. See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Podcast from the Entrepreneur's Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Podcast is copyright Entrepreneur's Circle 2016.